Good morning. Welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those of you who have come to realize, or at least open to the realization, that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are corrupt, that every one of them is counterproductive. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, toll free, 877-300-7645. I remember that in the days following the Malaysian airliner crash, this would be MH370, where it simply vanished. And people were saying there is no way that an airplane of that size can simply vanish in a modern world. And there were all manner of conspiracy theories that arose. They ranged from things like Islamic terrorists have them and they're going to barter them off on some island in Malaysia. Others had Putin, who is a favorite for conspiratorial theorists, having abducted the plane, and he was going to bomb the United States with it. In fact, we even had Islamic terrorists of the Islamic State going to be using the airplane as a decoy to drop a dirty bomb on a major major American city. And I told people at the time, I said, no, come on. That's absurd. None of those things are true. This airplane did not land. This airplane's passengers are not safe. This airplane crashed into the sea. I'm certain of it. And I can't tell you if it was a deliberate action, although I think it probably was, or it was just a factor of a slow and unrecognized failure of the pressurization system of the aircraft, so that once cabin pressurization was lost, that the pilot and crew did not don oxygen masks and simply fell asleep. And that those are the most likely scenarios. Well, a piece of the wing of the 777 was found on an island that's off of the African coast. It's the direction that the current would have taken this 777 wing appendage if it, in fact, crashed in the Indian Ocean off of Australia, which is where all really sane intelligence has placed it. So, we now know that the plane crashed into the sea. We now know that with this piece having emerged on the coastline of the island off of Africa, that the crash into the sea was not a nosedive. This was not a suicide crash. This is not like the troubled individual that flew his plane into the mountains in Europe. This had to be a plane that simply ran out of fuel, was still flying on autopilot, could not maintain airspeed or altitude because it ran out of fuel, and it glided into the sea. So you got to be really careful when you jump to conspiracy theories, when the natural order of things, the most obvious explanation, is far better and far more credible than anything in the realm of make-believe. Moving on, we have another story that is affirming of what we have been saying for some time, that cops are just way out of control, that the deadly force is used way too often, and it's all too often covered up. In this story, it is from Cincinnati, Ohio. A University of Cincinnati police officer was now indicted. Now, had he been a Cincinnati city police officer, a state police officer, sheriff, I'm not so certain he would have been indicted so quickly, because that aspect, the grand jury, is so heavily influenced by the police officers they hold almost total sway in that environment. You sit on a grand jury, the police will come in and they'll, you know, present their notes from any case, and they're never challenged. they come in uniform. They're thought to be credible. And grand juries typically side with them. And it's really rare that a grand jury will say, no, we don't believe the cop. We're not going to indict based upon the evidence that they are presenting. So if this was a university cop, which would have no say whatsoever in a grand jury hearing, be none, then this probably would not have led to an indictment this quickly. But if you recall, there was an African-American motorist who was pulled over for a crime even smaller than the woman in Texas who was pulled over for failure to indicate on a lane change. And by the way, I would say that it's the vast preponderance of people who do not indicate when changing lanes. They'll indicate if they're taking a right turn or a left turn, majority of the time, but not all the time. And very few people actually indicate on a lane change. And she, of course, is now dead. After being arrested and jailed by an overly aggressive cop. Well, in this particular case, the crime was failure to have a front license plate. Now, I'm going to tell you that with the exception of my SUVs and trucks, I don't have a front license plate on any of my remaining vehicles. And I have a sports car. It's now almost an antique, but to me, it's still classy. There's no front license plate on it. It would detract from the car. My wife has a sedan that is a fairly attractive sedan. There's no front license plate on it either. But that didn't stop the fact this cop saw this African-American driving in a car without a front license plate, and he pulled him over. One thing led to another, and the African-American was killed by the cop. The story reads, a University of Cincinnati police officer was indicted on Wednesday on murder charges in the fatal shooting last week of an unarmed black motorist who was stopped because of missing a front license plate. Hamilton County prosecutor Joseph Dieters called the July 19th killing of Samuel DuBose, 43, senseless and totally unwarranted. In fact, fairly frank conversation. He said, I mean, this was a bogus citation anyway. And he says, you know, it's just meaningless, trivial. Now, I think he tried to use the word that I think has one of the seven you can't say words on the air, but chicken followed by, well, what chickens do after they've eaten. And he's right. I mean, this is the problem. We ought not be having cops pull people over for not wearing a seatbelt, for failing to indicate a lane change and not having a front license plate. You want to pull somebody over? Make it for something that is reckless, that's potentially hazardous to someone else.
Yes, Ken?
I think these things can be things that you citation people for after they pull over. I mean, if that's whatever, because there's only 19 states that don't require you have both front and back license plates.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, I don't think that's something that you should just be.
And most cops, like my son, and has a pretty sedan in Texas. Texas requires front and back. I had my convertible in California, now have in Ohio. Both states require front and back. But never will a cop that's a sane cop pull you over. In fact, even my son was sitting there talking to a cop in a parking lot, and he was looking at his car, and it's a really pretty car. And he just said, you know, you need to know that if you don't have that front license plate, there is a chance that some cop who's having a really miserable day will pull you over and cite you for it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cost will be you'll have to put on a front license plate and you take it back off. But unless somebody's having a really rotten day, That's too much of a CS ticket, and well, they're just not going to bother you with
it. It's like you're going 5 miles over the speed limit. Most cops are going to be like, whatever. But if they're having a bad day.
Or nine. Yeah, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's like, you just can't, because if you cite somebody or not wearing a seatbelt when pulling in and back, pulling out and back into a parking lot, you know, if you're going to give somebody a citation for something that ridiculous, that meaningless, you're going to have them in a bad mood, like the woman given a citation for changing lanes without indication, or this guy pulled over for failure to have a front license plate. What it tells you is there's something deficient in the cop's ability to make good judgments.
Exactly.
And so the person is going to be PO'd. That's just the way it is.
It's like you said, obviously I should wear my seatbelt, but if the only thing I'm doing wrong on the road is that I don't have my seatbelt on, obviously I'm not endangering anybody.
All right, pulling you over and citing you for it is a ticket that is going to cause the driver to say, what in the world is wrong with you?
And now I'm driving pissed off, you know?
You know, my wife was stopped, pulled over to the side of the road, was using her cell phone because somebody called repeatedly. It was kind of an emergency. So she pulled over to the side of the road to use her cell phone. And a cop pulled up while she was parked and cited her for using her cell phone. I mean, it's just, and what she did is she berated the cop. The last two tickets I've gotten, I berated the cop. I didn't use foul language, didn't threaten the cop, but I let the cop know how inappropriate what they were doing and how that failure in judgment was such that they shouldn't have a badge and they shouldn't have a gun. And that's really what's happened in the most recent killings by police. Bad judgment. You know, even in the Wilson v. Brown killing, Wilson was the guy there in Ferguson, that the white cop that killed the black petty theft druggie in Brown. It was his lack of judgment that led to the death of Brown. Now, Brown was a bum, but he didn't deserve to die. And it was just a series of bad decisions, inability to process information. And if you have people that are that belligerent, you know, to think that they can deprive you of your freedom, that can harass you in this way, people are going to respond negatively to them. And if the cop can't exercise better judgment than that, we ought not be giving them guns. This is a serious problem. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We have Glenn on the line. Glenn, I don't know if you had a chance to hear Rob's oratory yesterday regarding the medical benefits of cannabis. Would love to have your input on it. I didn't know enough other than to say I wish cannabis was legal. I wish it was used less and that it was wholly legal. But did you hear any of that, and what's your opinion?
Well, I know almost very little about the topic. I've not been involved with it myself. It does seem, you know, the people involved with it, I mean, it seems like the benefits are there, you know, for a lot of people. Colorado hasn't fallen into the sea since legalizing it. A lot of trouble is created by these, you know, medical marijuana outfits that are, you know, it's easy enough to regulate them. Even in the states where the medical ones are legal, they seem to run into problems and lawsuits and harassment. And yet, yeah. Meanwhile, you've got the government importing heroin.
Right. Oh, yeah. I mean, you
cut down on the heroin and be a little more lenient about the marijuana.
Yeah. I mean, the government was hugely involved in cocaine during Vietnam, and is the culprit. I mean, if you want to look at the bottom line on the 236% increase in heroin use in the United States and its renewed production in Afghanistan post the U.S. invasion, you know, the U.S. government is the hypocrite, aiding that which it's claiming to war against. You know, my biggest issue with cannabis being illegal is twofold. One is you ought to be able to make your own choices. I don't want government to legislate morality or even health. So you ought to be able to choose what you do, so long as you're not hurting others. And last time I checked, there was not a lot of cases of somebody with marijuana hurting somebody else. And the second is, since there is such a huge percentage of the population that use marijuana, have used it, or are using marijuana, that when you label that segment of society criminal, you really miscast a lot of people. And I would say the third is, why would we ever want to deploy police and Justice Department resources on something as trivial as marijuana?
Besides, and I'll do this in a minute, but I have the perfect idea for if the law enforcement wants a revenue stream. Boy, do I have an idea for them. But just on the cannabis thing, first of all, are you aware of, have you ever heard of anyone being killed in a motor vehicle accident by someone who was smoking only marijuana? See, it's my contention that the dope smokers are too busy driving slow looking for, like, a convenience store, a pizza place.
Yeah, for munchies. Right. Yeah, as a matter of fact, when they list the benefits of, I went to a site this morning that lists the benefits of cannabis. And I don't want to turn the program into a review of cannabis, but, you know, Rob's a regular listener, and, you know, I didn't want to be dismissive of his advocacy of the benefits of cannabis, particularly since I'm a pro-choice individual, as are you. The first thing on the list, by the way, is AIDS. So I was saying, oh, come on, they're not claiming that pot is a cures HIV, but no, what it does is plays into what you just said. It gives the user the munchies, and so that AIDS victims typically are undernourished. Their desire to eat is depressed, and therefore most AIDS victims grow skinny, underweight. So marijuana causes you to want to eat.
You're going to take the elderly folks out in the courtyard to smoke, you know, before they come in to eat, have their insurance.
There you go. Yeah. The second thing that it says that it's good for is that there may be a link in treating alcoholism with marijuana. And when you read the article, what it basically does, it's, you know, the alcoholism is triggered by a craving in the brain, as, you know, are all addictions. And that same craving in the brain is satisfied with marijuana. So you're just substituting one drug for another that have a similar effect. You know, alcohol and marijuana put most people, make them drowsy, and they reduce inhibitions and they impair judgment. So in this regard, all you're doing is taking one drug and replacing it with another, although an overuse of marijuana is probably less caustic to your health than an overuse of alcoholism.
Well, my understanding is that the altered mental state is from the THC-9, but they can derive from marijuana the other chemical components that help with pain relief and that sort of thing without having any hallucinogen or mind-altering effect.
Okay. The third, by the way, is Alzheimer's, but they don't know that for sure because no one can remember. We'll be back with Glenn and Shattering Myths and a brief conversation on cannabis. So as we go down the list of health benefits, medical benefits of cannabis as presented by a cannabis advocacy site, anorexia is next on the list. It's also references the AIDS and cancer patients in this regard. And by the way, the only reference to cancer in terms of a benefit is that chemotherapy causes nausea that marijuana seems to be able to remedy to some degree, and both cancer treatment and just anorexia in general. You know, it causes you to eat. You know, don't know if there is a causal link, but if I'm going to have a glass of wine, if I'm going to have a beer with dinner, if I start before dinner with, you know, like I'm barbecuing, I will always look into the cupboard to find a munchie. I won't even drink wine without something to eat along with it. So I think all of these things seem to stimulate appetite.
Oh, I suspect the chemistry, I almost sounds more behavioral. But I mean, there's a definite chemical cause of appetite stimulation for the marijuana. The alcohol thing seems more dependency is the psychological component. Addiction is the chemical component. It sounds more like just like habit, because we tend to have crackers and cheese while wine or, you know.
I think, how about this? How about this instead of that? That I'm a lightweight. I'm, you know, so Indian. I like the flavor of wine. You know, I enjoy a beer on occasion. And I know that if I drink either on an empty stomach because of my physical makeup and the fact that I have a badly damaged kidneys and liver because of having had malaria as a kid, as a young man anyway. And so I'm a real lightweight. I can't process it worth a darn. And I don't like the feeling, even after a glass of wine, unless I've eaten along the way. And so I'll eat just because I know that I can enjoy the flavor without the effect.
Mm. Right, right. That makes sense. Yeah, that's
so I'm
plus, just genetically, as a sort of an, I believe it's, aren't you an Irish Native American, which sort of makes you a walking contradiction with regard to the fire?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely, I am. Absolutely. I'm, you know, there are some benefits of, you know, almost everything that is fed into the genetic pool. And one of the things is that as a Irishman, I'm predisposed to blabbering. And, you know, I was very shy as a young man, but boy, when they unleashed the blabbering plug, you know, I'm sure it's the Irish that came through, and I haven't stopped talking since. So, yeah, I think
well, the Irish are also known for Irish have their own whiskey. So,
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, no, I fully understand it. As a sober Irishman is a contradiction in terms. And so next one after anorexia is arthritis, and you know, it says ancient Chinese. The ancient Chinese can't be wrong. Well, the ancient Chinese were among the most vicious. I mean, you think about the Great Wall of China and the clashes between the various warlords in China that ultimately led to the Qin Dynasty, and then how the Qins presented themselves as gods and enslaved so many people for their own benefit. So could the ancient Chinese be wrong? Absolutely. But, you know, arthritis may be a situation. You broke up there.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. Yeah, you're going to defend the Chinese?
Yeah. How dare you question the judgment of people who consider dried tiger penis to be therapeutic?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, the Chinese now, from the ancient customs that are so deadly to so many different kinds of wild animals. I mean, rhinoceros is being hunted to extinction because of the ancient Chinese think that rhinoceros horn is some kind of a benefit of some sort. There are hundreds of things that the Chinese are flat out wrong about. That's not to say they're wrong about everything. I happen to like China. But, no, this is ridiculous. The next one on the list is autism. And I want to, you know, if you were to read all the various blogs on autism, I think what you would find is that everything on earth causes it, and everything on earth can be used to mitigate its consequence.
Yeah, so
and everybody on earth has it. I mean, it's, you know, it's not autism. I mean, it's autism. Yeah, autism is got to be the most overhyped disorder on planet Earth now.
Well, okay, now wait a minute. You got to realize they broadened the criteria to make this all-inclusive autism spectrum disorder to muddy the waters and masquerade the fact that by the year 2025, one in two kids are going to be born with. I've worked with very severe autism patients with, you know, severe.
I have really good friends that have autistic children. Yeah. I mean, I understand that autism is a serious problem, and that I don't understand how it all works, but it really is very difficult to process language and to interact with people with autism, and I understand. I'm not making light of the fact there is a real problem that has existed for a long time called autism, but I'm telling you that it is the most overhyped condition on the planet now because, you know, they're reducing the number, the frequency, or increasing the frequency of it. As you say, it'll soon be one and two by the time they're done. So everybody will have it according to their new definitions of it. And, you know, they have just all sorts of weird things that they claim cause it, like vaccines. And that is just like this, that, you know, having an autistic kid consume marijuana might only have a symptomatic benefit, and that they go from hyper to a bit more mellow.
Oh, no, they're not typically hyper. I think that what they're probably looking for is, you know, probably relief from seizures. Okay, with severe autism patients, you have some of the most severe seizures.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I've seen every seizure intervention known to man, surgical and chemical, you know, and pharmaceutical, you know, and sometimes you're just talking about very severe seizures. And I think they're finding that that helps mitigate that somewhat. But anyway, yeah,
keep your kid drugged and he won't have seizures. I don't know if that's a good trade-off.
Well, no, it's not. It's not necessarily many of the. Well, first of all, it's pretty hard to treat seizures without central nervous system depression. Okay, I think the idea with the marijuana is that actually you can achieve some seizure mitigation without as much central nervous system depression. So that's a big part, I think, of that. But again, I'm no expert. That's for darn sure. See your doctor and become a
doctor. There you go.
So look.
There you go. So what do you think about the Cincinnati situation where the cop has now been indicted for murder?
Yeah, it's good that they've indicted. We had a good outcome from the AME church attacks, but it does seem like I really have to wonder if somebody isn't trying to foment racial violence. Who is telling these cops that it is okay to behave this way? You know, this is just this psychosis has to be stopped, or we will legitimately have people in the streets. You know.
Yeah. I don't think there's anybody necessarily individually instructing in this. I think it's a combination of a lot of things, and one of them is that we changed the way we indoctrinate young people as they go off to war and as we report wars, and we now have new definitions of civilians as terrorists and insurgents whom are deserving to die, and we've indoctrinated young men and women who we sent off to kill them. And we honor them with parades when they come back, having killed them. And so life and death to young people, both in and out of the military, is presented differently. Life and death is presented differently vis-a-vis the drones and the video games. When drones are flown like video games. And I think it's a combination of those two things along with the culminative effects of political correctness, where we now have the second generation indoctrinated in political correctness are incapable of exercising good judgment. And so these are people that never should be given a deadly weapon, ever.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of all those things.
Right, right. And, you know, I don't know how you'll feel about this, but, you know, I know, mm-hmm. I know how you feel about Christianity, but say what you will about Christianity, when you compare its view of the sanctity of human life to the view taken by socialist mm-hmm. secular humanism or Islam or even Talmudic Judaism, Christianity did seem to advocate this, have this love God, love your neighbor thing, you know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. It does seem somewhat superior.
Yeah, only skin deep, though. When I was looking at the badges, the arm patches of the police force that was associated with these killings, it says for God and country on the badge. The Christians are the most prone in America to celebrate our military. They're the most, God bless our troops. So there is a hypocrisy there.
Yes, yes.
And if you look at the right, and if you look at the first European colonists into the Americas, they were not only universally Christian, they were universally savage, deadly. I mean, they were among the most despicable people to have ever infected this continent, savagely killing and robbing the native peoples. So there's a real contradiction there when you get to, okay, that's the testimony, but what are the words? What are the actions like?
Right, right. For a reason, and without ascribing it to any people group, it certainly does seem that America, actually in previous decades, was a bit of a kinder, gentler place, you know. And even when you had Pope John Paul II decrying the culture of death, I mean, I have never seen such a blatant disregard, wanton disregard for human life as I have at this stage of my life.
Yeah, and when you look to it, at Islam is a death cult. The Quran and Muhammad and Allah never gave Muslims a reason to live, only a reason to die and to kill others in the process. So, yeah, the second most popular religion is a death cult. I was reading an article that I thought was interesting. National Public Radio. Do you know that National Public Radio is the nation's most widely heard audio source of news? I would never have thought that in a million years. But it is, nonetheless. Yeah, that it's the nation's most widely heard audio news source, at least according to this article that may have been written by the National Public Radio. It was written on the seven words that you cannot say and how it is better to misrepresent what was said than it is to say these words. And it's, you know, political correctness gone amok. And so with the NPR, they now have guidelines as to how you can or cannot use one of these seven words. And I'm going to share what the words are by inferring words that rhyme with them here in a moment. That it's better to mislead, to change the facts and present errant information as accurate than it is to say any one of these words. One of the places where it came up with NPR is NPR was doing an investigative story on the indiscriminate killing that was taking place and being attributed to the U.S. military in Afghanistan and also in Iraq. And the mindset of the soldiers who would just go in and blow away civilians. And so they had film. They had film of this, and the video track they played on NPR, which was of the soldiers not only shooting women and children, but of their profane language and their profane depiction of the women and children they were killing.
Right.
And they aired it as it was, and the FCC stepped in to find them.
So we have to maintain the moral high ground by not using curse words when we're busy killing people the world over.
Oh, of course, and putting out a weaponized group of a weaponized gang that takes pleasure in dehumanizing human targets. Anyway, here's the seven words, and it's just so odd that these would be the seven. The first of them is poo-poo, but with an S. Can't say poo-poo with an S. The second one is pee, but also starting with a P, but ending with an S. Can't say that. Why? Well, I mean, normal bodily functions. Why that would make the, I mean, some bureaucrats say, I'm going to come up with seven words here. And,
it's in the English Old Testament with an ETH on there, too.
Oh, of course.
P-U-P against the wall.
Yeah, yeah. The next is coitus, but with an F.
Mm-hmm.
So the old F-bomb. Okay, I can say the F-bomb, but you
Christian
can say...
That's a good Christian word. It's an acronym. It's an no. The F word is a good. It's an acronym meaning for unlawful carnal knowledge.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Boy, see, I learned something. For unlawful carnal knowledge. Are you yanking my chain, or is that really an acronym?
No, the story goes that it was you put a sign put above those who were being, put to death for it as an explanation of why they were being put to death. They slapped the sign up there, you know.
Can you imagine? Here's these Christians. They have a religion based upon mislabeling Yahweh's Torah teaching law. And they say they are not going to obey the law. They're not going to be slaves to that law. And yet they come up with governments and support governments and pass moral laws that they'll put people to death for, including unlawful carnal knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Right. We've had the substitute word that's allowable, which is friggin, which is named after Frigga, which is what Friday is named after, the fertility goddess. So there are all sorts of words.
Friggin, so yeah, friggin, yeah, it is the fertility goddess
Friday.
For whom Friday is named, yeah.
And that's why.
So the acronym, for unlawful carnal knowledge is a better word than the saying the name of the pagan goddess. The other one inbound female plumbing for their genitalia. Yes, and then you have the someone who sucks. Bill Clinton's episode in the White House with Monica Lewinsky. You can't say that, and right. You can't say if your mother is ever engaged in unlawful carnal knowledge, particularly with an at the end of it.
Yeah.